Meyerhoff, and we will proceed to the fifth case, In Re Herman. Mr. Fink.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Jeffrey Fink for creditor John Miller. Mr. Miller has an unfortunate distinction in this case, and it's made clear in the appendix to the appellee's brief. If you turn to A18 of the appendix of appellee's brief, which is the label matrix for noticing in this bankruptcy case, and it goes on for three full pages, and then we turn to A21, which is the top, and look at the top. There's a little U, paren, John P. Miller. Now, if you turn to the preceding page at the bottom, it says the following recipients may be have been bypassed for notice due to an undeliverable address. Now, here's the distinction. John Miller is the only individual, and even more importantly, he is the only unsecured non-priority claimant that set forth in Schedule F of the debtor's schedules, where the debtor checks the disputed category. So of all these names here, the only disputed claim, disputed by the debtor, is John P. Miller.
But of course, at the top of page A20, there is John P. Miller, care of the lawyer.
That's
correct.
And
that was the whole factual finding by the bankruptcy, by the court.
That's correct. And the bankruptcy court started quite correctly. The bankruptcy court said that the debtor knew creditor Miller's home address, but did not send notice to that address. Indeed, the debtor had been at creditor Miller's home many, many times because the underlying dispute...
Well, he built it. I mean, it's the windows,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Then in the bankruptcy court, on the basis of finding that the debtor did not send notice to Miller's address, said that violated Bankruptcy Rule 1007A, which refers to Schedule F, which both the first sentence of Schedule F and in the leftmost column of Schedule F says set forth the name of the creditor and the creditor's address. Now, here's where the bankruptcy court erred as a matter of law. After making the finding that there was a violation of Bankruptcy Rule 1007A, the bankruptcy court discussed notice for purposes of Section 523 without reference to any of the bankruptcy rules.
But wait a minute. I mean, what we have in this case, I'm willing to believe it was a bad way to go about things, even though Stilp's firm, Stilp himself, is handling the very dispute that is being scheduled, essentially. However, Stilp discovers this and sends an email to Miller on August 31st, 2010. And that itself is about 4 weeks before the September 24th deadline for opposing discharge. And Miller doesn't do anything. Miller could have gotten back to Stilp and said, you know, I need to do something in the bankruptcy, or Miller could have hired a bankruptcy lawyer who would understand that even if it's a no-asset bankruptcy, and so you're not really going to get any money out of it, you could get the benefit of non-dischargeability, which is what you're really after. I understand that. But nothing happens. And there is time to go to the bankruptcy court, ask for an extension if need be. So that's my problem with this case. It's not the things that you're talking about.
And that could be answered precisely. First of all, the bankruptcy court found that Mr. Miller was not apprised of the deadline. didn't know that the deadline was 24 days off.
Right, so 24th of September.
That's right, so 24 days.
And then he waits another year before he does anything, which is another issue, but you can stay with the first one.
All right, with respect to Bankruptcy Rule 4007, it says that the court shall give all creditors no less than 30 days' notice of the time so fixed in the manner provided in Rule 2002.
Well, let me just play the devil's advocate here with you, because the court thinks that it has served Mr. John P. Miller, care of Attorney Stilp, way back when. Lawyers are normally understood to be the agents of their clients and are supposed to, you know, if you have the expertise, you can do it yourself. If you don't have the expertise, you should find somebody who does. And if the lawyer is the person who lost this potential benefit of a non-dischargeable debt for Mr. Miller, maybe there's a legal malpractice claim, maybe there are other kinds of claims, but the bankruptcy court has served a person with a lawyer-client relationship to Mr. Miller.
There's a common law of principal agent. However, what we're saying here is for purposes of the bankruptcy rules, there are rules that provide the proper notice. The notice is to be to the creditor and the creditor's address. Specifically, Section 523, which is what we're talking about, mm-hmm. has a rule counterpart in Rule 4007. Rule 4007 refers to Rule 2002 for purposes of notice. Rule 2002 G2 says that notice shall be made to the address shown on the list of the creditors. Now, the list of the creditors is described in 1007A. That's the very rule that the bankruptcy court said that the debtor violated. And what 1007A again says is it refers to the Schedule F, mm-hmm. which is the schedule that says list creditor and creditor's address.
Look, you're essentially saying that Mr. Herman lied, basically, when he puts down that he doesn't know what Miller's address is other than Stilp. I think when all is said and done, that's the allegation.
We're saying that. However, in the Smith case, which is cited by both the bankruptcy court and the district court, there's a footnote that says that the state of mind of the debtor does not matter. Does not matter. So we don't have to prove it. The notice, the 24 days, is less than allowed in Bankruptcy Rule 4007. Indeed, there's a finding from both the bankruptcy court and the district court that it wasn't enough time. August 31st being only 24 days before September 24th, that's not enough time. The word legal representative is mentioned in the bankruptcy rules, but not in the context that applies to this case. A creditor is required to send to the legal representative where there is an infant or an incompetent. That doesn't apply here. There would also conceivably be another exception to the rules of sending it to the creditor's address. The fundamental due process case of Mullane versus Central Hanover Bank.
I'm very worried about Mullane, in fact, so you are quite right to cite that.
Well, what the Supreme Court says there can be exceptions in the name of necessity. So, for example, if the debtor did not have an address for the creditor and through reasonable diligence could not find that address, well, the Supreme Court says you do the next best thing. But we don't have a necessity argument here because the debtor, Herman, knew precisely where Miller lived, having been there many, many times.
The record is absolutely clear, I assume, that Miller hasn't moved from that location.
Absolutely not. He's still there. Indeed, Herman
despite
and Miller
his
live,
issue with the windows and all the rest of it.
Herman and Miller live a mile apart. I mean, that's mm-hmm. that's the irony of this whole thing. The rules allow...
Your time has expired, but you may complete that thought.
All right. The rules allow a creditor to designate an authorized agent. But nowhere in the rules does it allow the debtor to designate the creditor's authorized agent.
Thank you, Mr. Fink.
Thank you.
Ms. Rodriguez.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Tiffany Rodriguez for the debtor, appellee, Mr. Herman. Your Honors, the issue before this Court today is whether or not the Bankruptcy Court erred.
Could you keep your voice up just a little? That device in front of you just records. It doesn't amplify.
Okay. Your Honor, the issue is whether or not the Bankruptcy Court erred when it denied the appellant's motion to reopen the closed bankruptcy case.
And it seems to me, I want to start with Mullane, actually. I'm very troubled by the schedule and by the apparent effort to avoid giving effective notice to Mr. Miller. The address of Mr. Miller is certainly known to Mr. Herman. To send it to a lawyer to begin with is, you couldn't serve process under Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 4 by just sending something to the person's lawyer. There's a moment, and in bankruptcy, it's when this schedule is created, where individuals have to be served personally. And I can't see this as notice reasonably calculated to apprise the interested person, namely Miller, of the ticking of the clock. And even when he gets the email from Stilp on August 31st, as Mr. Fink points out, it's not a comprehensive email that says there's a bankruptcy proceeding and if you want to object to the discharge of your debt, you have until the 24th of September to do it. He's at sea. He doesn't know anything about that.
And, Your Honor, I think the important fact at issue in this case is that there was over 5 years of prior litigation between these parties. The most recent onslaught.
And so why doesn't Herman list Mr. Miller's address on the thing? There's this sketch sort of reference to care of Attorney Stilp on the schedule.
He listed notice, as you can see, care of Attorney Stilp. The reason he did that is he had a reasonable belief that there was still active litigation about to be pursued against him. As of May 10th, less than a month before this bankruptcy was filed, Attorney Stilp was actively representing
Mr. That doesn't answer the question under the bankruptcy rules about whether it's acceptable for somebody in the position of a creditor not to get personal notice.
Your Honor, and that can be
period.
Resolved. The Fulton case and the Schick case, cited in the brief and cited by the district court, both state that if an attorney received notice on behalf of a creditor and that they are the attorney that was representing that creditor and litigating the claim in the bankruptcy matter,
in
they
the
are
bankruptcy
authorized
matter, which Stilp was not doing. So those cases,
Your Honor,
don't apply.
I would respectfully state that until a bankruptcy case is on file, there's obviously no bankruptcy case. I'm sorry, no bankruptcy counsel on file. However, an attorney who is actively litigating the claim at issue in a bankruptcy case, which Mr. Stilp was the attorney actively representing Mr. Miller, in litigating the only claim, alleged disputed claim he had with Mr. Herman, the notice under the case law to that attorney is proper. And in fact, a debtor.
But that's not what. Which bankruptcy rule permits that? Not some district court decision, but which bankruptcy rule permits sending the notice of that schedule not directly to somebody whose address is known to you?
Well, the bankruptcy rules require notice to be sent to the creditor and the creditor's known address.
Right.
And the
and
bankruptcy
so Herman knew Miller's address. There's no doubt about that.
He did, but there's also no dispute that the notice received was the correct and proper address for Attorney Stilp,
but
and Mr. Stilp was an
agent.
You're
not answering my question, though. I mean, I want to know where in the bankruptcy rules it says it's okay, as opposed to some district court opinion.
Your Honor, I don't know if it's a rule, but the notice that a debtor is required to give a creditor is notice reasonably calculated to apprise that creditor
precisely.
Of the bankruptcy.
And so if you know the person's home address, that's the gold standard. That's the best address.
Well, I would say that if a creditor is represented by an attorney, it's actually almost more careful notice to give notice to that to their attorney. Their attorney is more likely to understand the ramifications of a bankruptcy filing. They're more likely to understand the deadlines and pass those on. A debtor is acting carefully when they give notice to an attorney.
So do you think Mr. Miller has a malpractice action against Attorney Stilp?
I don't practice in that area, but I would think that based on the records in this case, it appears that his office timely received notice and, according to Mr. Miller, failed to pass on the deadlines to him. And stated by Judge Barbosa, that was an unfortunate circumstance, but my client had no control over the notice that we state was properly provided to Mr. Miller. And, Your Honors, besides that, the facts are clear. He received notice care of Attorney Stilp the very same month the bankruptcy was filed. He still waited 15 months before doing anything with the bankruptcy court. He also admits to receiving actual notice August 31st, 2010.
But not full actual notice. He knows there is a bankruptcy, but he doesn't know that September 24th is looming.
Correct.
Because he could have gotten legal assistance at that point or even gone in himself and asked the bankruptcy court for more time.
He could have. He received actual notice prior to the deadlines had expired, but he stated in his brief that he was not informed of the deadlines.
Right.
However, so he does admit to being in communications with the U.S. Trustee's office, and he had more than ample time, more than 13 months notice to be able to file something with the bankruptcy court, file some kind of motion to extend time, some kind of motion with the bankruptcy court. He sat on his rights, failed to do anything. He waited 13 months to file anything with the bankruptcy court. He must be able to allege cause in order to reopen the bankruptcy case. I don't think there's anything in the bankruptcy rules that explicitly state that a debtor has to list notice to each and every creditor's individual address. It says to the creditor's address. The case law interpreting that has stated that if an attorney is the authorized agent for a creditor, they are entitled to receive notice of the bankruptcy proceeding, and that notice is constructively imputed to the creditor. That's exactly what happened in this case. Mr. Stilp admitted to receiving the notice, admitted that his office received the notice, and that notice should be imputed onto Mr. Miller. My client complied with bankruptcy rules and bankruptcy procedure and received his discharge in September of 2010. It wasn't until over a year later that anything was filed with the bankruptcy court.
Now, he has multiple addresses for quite a few entities in this list. Two different addresses for Jim's Decorating, multiple addresses. I don't know what to make of that, but it is a fact.
Yes, that is a fact, Judge, and there's nothing in the record about that.
Three different addresses for Joseph H. Human and Sons. Two different addresses for NICOR. I mean, it's hard to avoid the thought that he's playing a little fast and loose with Mr. Miller.
And, Your Honor, I guess I would disagree on that. His testimony before the court, before the evidentiary hearing before Judge Barbosa, was that he provided all of his creditor information to his attorney.
And here's Barbara Davis with a home address and a care of Vincent C. Argento attorney. So he treats Mr. Miller differently from Barbara Davis, too.
And, Your Honor, I was not obviously bankruptcy counsel, so I can't testify as how the schedules were prepared.
And I'm just saying he knew Miller's address, but he does give both addresses for Davis, and he doesn't for Miller.
He does, but we don't know how recently those attorneys had been representing those creditors. We don't know if it was 3 weeks prior to the bankruptcy be filing. It could have been the long distance, whereas my client believed it was more careful to give notice to Attorney Stilp because he believed a lawsuit was going to be filed against him at any moment, because the district court had given him leave to refile his case.
Right. No, I understand that. I'm just saying the rest of his behavior does not bear out that theory very well.
Your Honor, I think the case law supports our argument that this attorney was an authorized agent for the debtor, or sorry, for the creditor, and that the notice he received was therefore proper notice. The only claim, or the motion of reopen, was to file a proposed adversary complaint. It's undisputed that his claims under 523A2 and A6 and 727A were time-barred, as they weren't filed in 60 days. Therefore, the only issue before this court, then, is whether or not he had proper notice and grounds to reopen the bankruptcy court. I don't believe he has alleged sufficient grounds to show that the bankruptcy court abused its discretion. The bankruptcy court was presented with a full evidentiary hearing, and based on the testimony it heard, it found that the notice to Attorney Stilp was proper notice. We would respectfully request today that you affirm both the ruling of the bankruptcy court and the district court and uphold the denial of the motion to reopen.
Thank you, Ms. Rodriguez.
You,
Mr. Fink, your time had expired, but you may have an additional minute.
Thank you. This is not a matter of discretion. The bankruptcy court erred as a matter of law with respect to the plain language of the bankruptcy rules. The bankruptcy court did not consider those rules in connection with whether notice was proper in the context of Section 523. With respect to the timing on the reopening, the Stark decision of this court, and Judge Power was on that panel, allowed a debtor.
I've been on so many panels you can't even count them.
Judge, I argued before you back in 1985. And you've been at it for a while at that point.
I started in this court in 1974, so keep going.
All right. In that case, in Stark, the panel allowed the debtor to reopen a bankruptcy case more than a year later when a hospital bill turned up that the debtor thought was going to be covered by insurance. And the law specifically with respect to reopening is there is no specific time limit. As a matter of fact, what happened here is that Mr. Miller was going through a divorce, had no knowledge of bankruptcy, ultimately needed the assistance, found out the existence of the U.S. Trustee's office, and they helped him figure out what he had to do. Eventually, he got to a bankruptcy lawyer. It was a very difficult period in his life, going through a divorce. He had money problems. He's also a international pilot, so he was not in the country, at least a portion of that time. So that's what took the time. But the point is, there is no time limit. So we're asking that this court reverse the district court and the bankruptcy court, reopen the case, and allow Mr. Miller to file a Section 523 adversary complaint. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fink. Thank you, Ms. Rodriguez. The case taken under...